Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or you can go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about what's happening in the world today and where the world is going, and we're not afraid to take a kind of a contrarian view about what's happening in the world and where the world is going. To wit, if you're not eager to see what's coming next, if you're not brimming with anticipation about each dawning day, in short, if you're not totally excited about the future, then you're just not paying attention. But that's okay. If you're not paying attention, that's what we're here for, is to get you caught up. And what we've got to tell you is that we stand on the brink of what may be a very bright future, a future that few of us have even imagined, much less hoped for, a future that few of us expect, but that we will all want to live to see. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Brimming with anticipation, but Phil.
Oh, that's what I like to hear. All right. So you're tanned, rested, and ready, I understand.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Last week I was in San Antonio having a great time there, went to SeaWorld, had a bunch of fun there, then went to Austin with a family and had even more fun in Austin, and got some tales to tell when we're ready.
All right. Well, we want to check in on your Austin stories. First, we want to say hi to our chat host, Michael Darling, who I believe is also with us in the virtual studio.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm great.
All right. Well, glad to hear that. We're looking forward to getting your review of the Clone Wars here in just a few minutes. But first, Stephen's going to tell us all about his 50 words or less, what I did on my summer vacation. Go.
Okay. All right. Are you guys familiar with the website Ain't It Cool News?
Yeah, I've been there a couple times.
Yeah, Harry Knowles is the guy that runs that website, and he has a hangout in Austin, the Alamo Draft House. Awesome, awesome place to go see a movie. Based on having been to that guy's website a number of times and having heard him brag about it all these years since basically 97, since how long I've been reading that website, I felt like I had to go, and it was great. I mean, you go in, you sit down, there's like a little table in front of you when you sit down to watch the movie, and you fill out what you want on this on a piece of paper, fold it up, put it in front of you like a flag. Waitress comes by, takes your paper, brings you food and drinks and whatever. And no kids are in there because they serve alcohol, and so, man, it was awesome. No kids, you know, I mean, it's
perfect.
A movie,
you know, once in a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A movie theater without kids is pretty awesome. The movie I went to wouldn't have been appropriate for kids anyway. Tropic Thunder was the name of it, and remember how I said that Wanted was about the bluest movie I'd seen in a long time?
Right.
This was every bit as bad. I mean, but it was a whole lot more fun. This was one of the funniest spoofs I've seen. I don't know. I can't name when I've seen something that, you know, it would literally go from laugh to laugh to laugh throughout the entire thing. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, two things I've heard about it, and you can tell me if this is true or not, is that the movie's good, but the first few minutes are trailers for movies that don't exist is the best part. Would you agree with that? That's what I've heard.
It was genius. That beginning of that movie was, I mean, the perfect setup for that. Because I don't think it'll take too much away from it, and I don't think we're giving anything away. The trailers that they show are are showcase the actors that you're going to get to see in this movie, Tropic Thunder.
And not the actual actors, but the actors that these actors
are portraying, exactly.
Yeah, the characters in the movie. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
And just brilliant. I mean, brilliant. They introduce you, and in within seconds, each you see, you know, what kind of character these people are, and what kind of what they're known for, and the baggage they're carrying into the Tropic Thunder movie, and just brilliant. And so, it's you got to see it if you don't mind. You know, language that's incredibly foul, and if you don't go in with being too easily offended, because if no matter what group you're a member of, it will get skewered in this movie.
So it's universal in its skewering.
Exactly.
Now, the other thing I heard is that the big spoiler, I won't give it away, but the big surprise of the movie is who's playing the fat guy, and most people have to actually get to the credits at the end before they realize who that is.
Okay, I didn't watch the credits. Have I missed something important?
I'll tell you in the back channel.
Okay, all right. Anyway, it was a great movie. Go see it. If you ever get a chance, if you're ever in Austin or there's an Alamo Draft House in your neighborhood, that's the place to go check out a movie sometime. It's worth it. The food, it was wonderful. And so, yeah, Alamo Draft House, cool. Movie is great. Go see it.
All right. Good stuff. So, now have you read the back channel? Do you see the name there?
Let's see. My apologies.
Did you know this?
Oh, yeah, I knew that. I knew at the moment I saw it.
Oh, okay, well, apparently some people aren't figuring that out and don't know until they see the credits.
Yeah, I mean, the moment I saw that actor on screen, I didn't know it was a secret, actually. Okay.
Oh, well, it's not a secret, but apparently some people aren't figuring it out.
Well, so. it was also a brilliant portrayal by that particular actor, and if you can't figure it out, then you stay for the credits, but I recognize that actor immediately. But anyway, there was another funny thing that happened over the weekend. I think it's worth telling. There, I was staying in the Hyatt Regency Hotel right there on the town lake, which is next to a bridge that crosses the lake there. This bridge is the Congress Street Bridge, and it's known for having like 2 million bats that live underneath it. And every night, these bats come out, and there's so many of them, people stand out there just to watch them. And it's a pretty amazing sight to see them go. And I was out there and with you know, my family and everything, and this guy, who's a homeless guy, is standing out there, and he's wearing a cheerleader suit, complete with, and it was funny because he wasn't, you know, you expect a transvestite's got to at least try, you know, to look female. Well, he's got a beard, and, you know, I mean, but he's wearing this whole, it was hilarious. He was out there, he was cheering, and somebody asked him, "What you cheering for?" And the bats, you know, he was going nuts about the bats. And so he was like, and then he addressed the crowd, if a bat falls to the ground, do not touch it. The bats, you know, it might be rabid or have other diseases. And I lean over to my kids and say, you know, I never thought I'd say this, but listen to the homeless guy dressed as a cheerleader. He knows what he's talking about.
He's giving good advice.
these are real pearls of wisdom here. And so, yeah. But anyway, it was worth going out to see that as well. I mean, the sky was filled with bats for a long time. I mean, it was worth seeing. So,
wow.
Yeah, but it was a fun trip.
Kind of a scene out of the Dark Knight, maybe, with the bats.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly like that.
Actually, it's the first one. I can't remember the name of the Batman.
Yeah, Batman Begins. Yeah. Michael Darling is asking, what kind of cheerleader was he? University of Texas cheerleader.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what he was. He was
did you take pictures by any chance?
Did not get a picture of that guy. I did not want to encourage him. He looked like he wanted to have a conversation with somebody, and he may be an Austin treasure, because it seemed like everybody, you know, the locals that were like jogging by on the path were, you know, high rank, you know, they knew him, you know.
They all knew him, yeah.
Yeah, he's the homeless guy dressed as a cheerleader, apparently. That's his
stick.
And
obviously he knew the bat process, so that's...
Yeah, apparently he's the spokesman for that, the local spokesman.
Okay, well, good. Glad to hear you had a good time on vacation. We're glad to have you back. Not that you ever missed a week of the show or anything like that, but... The blogging was a little light, not that I have any right to complain about that. Now, before, Michael, we get to your review of The Clone Wars, I just want to say I didn't mention what our topic was going to be tonight. We are talking about long shot futures. We're going to talk about unlikely but desirable futures. We'll be getting to that in just a few minutes after Michael tells us all about The Clone Wars. So go.
Well, let's tie it together here. If Lucas is on a path to now do backstory and side stories and the rest of the universe contemporaneous with the Star Wars sextet, it is a long shot, and it's not there yet.
Yeah.
It was 100% CGI, which is not a problem for me. I mean, actually, some of the animation was weaker than I expected. I thought it would be a little bit more visually awesome. There were some awesome visuals, but for the most part, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty much in league with the best of the best on Saturday mornings right now. And
wow.
And yet I went with a group of 8 to 10-year-olds. They loved it. And so I was like, oh, clearly this isn't aimed at me. This was aimed at them. And I think it hit the mark with them. They all were, you know, excited about the characters, and they were excited about the story, and the jokes worked. And so it's like, okay, it worked.
So, you know, one of the things that that Stephen, you had said about The Dark Knight was that that's not one for kids. Here's one that maybe is for kids but not for grown-ups, right? So,
yeah.
And there's a few movies that came out that work pretty well either way, like Iron Man, which would be kind of the, you know, you can just about
any, you know, my thought is that a good kids movie can entertain adults too, though. If it doesn't entertain adults,
right?
Yeah, it's just, Star Wars ought to be able to entertain adults, you know. If not, then, you know, you're going for the Ewoks movie type level.
Right.
And you know, I, why bother, you know? Why
exactly.
not? If you're going to make Star Wars, make it awesome.
I'm actually hopeful that if this is the beginning of a whole CGI spinoff, whether it is a TV show or they have some other, you know, they have a theatrical release and then DVD and then fill it in with whatever the plan is, I'm hopeful that it could get better.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. I'm not, you know, don't let lukewarmness dog it.
It's supposed to be a Cartoon Network series that starts this fall. Yeah,
apparently
they've already got it in can for the show this fall, apparently.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah, it was just basically a big promo for that show. So
yeah.
If that works for you, go for it. So bottom line is thumbs down for grown-ups. Kids might like it, though.
Yeah, and I would say, yeah, thumbs sideways for the grown-ups, because if you really get the Star Wars mythology, there's a few things that happen in this that you would not want to be unaware of.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, it's like the bad Star Trek Next Generation episodes. You don't want to miss, for example, that Data slept with Yar. You want to know that.
Even though it was a bad episode.
Right, even though that happened in a bad episode.
Yeah,
correct.
Because it foreshadowed some good episodes after that. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Well, mainly, Data slept with Yar. I mean, come on.
That's an important fact. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it is referenced later.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
That's a good point. I'll have to take the kids anyway, so that gives me a reason to actually see it for myself. I appreciate
it. If you're
there
a complete
you
geek who doesn't want to be missing out on any vital geek knowledge about Star Wars, go see this. Is that what I'm to understand?
I would say that's a fair appraisal.
Yeah,
right.
Well, I have a copy of Star Wars Christmas Special, so I guess that's if I got to be a completist, I guess.
Now, I read a review that compared the new movie, The Clone Wars, unfavorably to the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Ooh,
so,
man.
You're scraping the bottom of the bottom here, I think. You should share that around, Stephen. You got that on DVD? I'd like to see that, actually. Maybe.
Okay, I'll get you a copy. No problem.
We'll talk about that afterwards. We've got other things to talk about. This is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're going to be talking about long-shot futures. And if you'd like to join our conversation, we're going to be looking for the best long-shot future that a Fast Forward Radio listener provides us, either via chat or by calling into the program, or who leaves comments on the blog or here at Fast Forward Radio. Give us your best hoped-for, not likely, but you'd still like to see it happen future, and the winner, when selected, is going to get what, Stephen?
Well, a coffee mug, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Not just any coffee mug, a Fast Forward Radio coffee mug. And by the way, a big one. It's not Wii. It's
Oh, too late. I'm sorry. Not anywhere near the switchboard at the moment.
Never mind. The point is, it's a great big coffee mug. It's got the Fast Forward Radio logo on it.
We have three sizes: Wii, not so Wii, and friggin' huge.
It's friggin' huge.
It's friggin' huge, man. So it's well worth it. We've used these in the past to help people stir their imaginations to start coming up with ideas to how to solve the world's problems. This week, and probably running into next week, we're probably going to do this over 2 weeks. This one's more fun, just to get people thinking about these kind of long shot futures, these less than 100% guaranteed locked in futures that we're still looking forward to. So I'll start. I'll give an example of one because I think that probably gets us going on this faster than anything else. I do want to say that they can be big, they can be little, they can be scenarios for the whole world, or they can be one little technological development that you'd really like to see happen. So I've brought a list for the program this evening that I think works from smaller to bigger, and we've got a great list we should mention from our friend Brian Wang, who is the director of research for the Lifeboat Foundation, and we had invited him to be part of the program tonight. He was not able to join us, but he sent us a bunch of good ideas about long shots that he's hoping will come in. So we'll be using those, and I'm gonna, you know what? I'm gonna send Brian one of the mugs too. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. He's the guest. I mean, he's a guest when even when he isn't a guest. He's been a great list there.
And it wouldn't be fair to put him in the running against mere mortals at this point, having looked at this list. So not to say anything about our listeners who are going to come up with some great ideas, but Brian is, again, he's the director of research for the Lifeboat Foundation. So he gets his own mug, and then we'll continue the competition. Okay, so let's get started. My first one is a blog post that I did just a couple of days ago. Talked about this, and it's a little something called alpha lipoic acid. And apparently this stuff's been around for a while, and I guess there has been research done with it before. I had not heard of it. I was not familiar with it. But
nor was I. The first time I heard it, I think, was when I read your post.
Okay, well, so you and I are pretty much in the same boat. Apparently the stuff has been around, and there has been some thought that it would have some bearing on weight loss. But this research that I was reporting on shows something pretty startling, pretty dramatic, and that is this. That they do research on the life extension benefits of caloric restriction on mice, right?
Right.
You're familiar with that. The
because
that
their lifespan is so short.
Right.
And you can see very quickly if you're getting any benefit from any particular treatment.
Exactly it. You can track a number of mouse lifetimes, even extended long mouse lifetimes, over a relatively short period of time, and so they're a good viable subject for that kind of research. For those who aren't familiar, it has been well established that restricting caloric intake in mice and some other species of animals makes them much healthier and extends their lifespan up to 20, 30, 40%. Gives them a much longer life and a much healthier life. Some human beings have attempted to emulate this, hoping to get the same benefits, and you have this kind of small community of people who go on this pretty severe calorie-restricted diet in the hopes of getting the same health benefits and the same life extension benefits that mice enjoy.
Right. The people who really do this and who are serious about it, I mean, they look gaunt. I mean, they look a little bit like, they're in semi-starvation.
Yeah, supermodel to eating disorder almost. But the difference being, they're very healthy. These people aren't ill. They're very healthy, they have my admiration. My hat is off to them. It is not something that I believe I would be able to do.
Yeah.
At least for the rest of my life. That's the thing. I look at that and go, man, I could not stay on that for the rest of my life. But here is what is so interesting about what this research with alpha-lipoic acid has shown. So you take mice and you put him on a calorie restriction diet for a few months, a year, whatever the appropriate period of time is, and then you take part of that population of mice and you take them off the calorie restriction diet, what do you suppose happens?
Well, then they go back to being more normal-looking mice, and whatever benefit they got from caloric restriction goes away, and they die at a normal age rather than an extended age.
Exactly
right.
I mean, they might have accrued some benefit along the way, so they might live a little longer, but pretty quickly they gain all the weight, right? So they become normal-sized mice. And, the benefits that they were getting from caloric restriction quickly disappear, and
right.
They become normal, mortal mice, regular mice, except for some mice that were subjects of the experiment that I was writing about, in which mice were subjected for several months to a caloric-restricted diet, and then they were taken off that, fed normally, and that diet was supplemented with alpha-lipoic acid. And when they did that, these mice continued to show the same basic body weight and body structure as though they had continued on caloric restriction, and they had the same life extension benefits.
So basically, it was as though the body was fooled into believing that they were still not eating.
Exactly. Irrespective of how many calories you were putting into these mice were staying thin, and they were staying super healthy and living longer, even though what they were being fed was much more than what the other mice who were experiencing the same benefits were getting.
Okay, so has anybody tried this as a human, lose a bunch of weight, going on a pretty severe diet for a few months, and then taking ALA and seeing if you stay thin? Has anyone tried that yet?
Well, someone is trying it. This is what was reported in the Mail Online, and I quoted it in the blog post. Dr. Malcolm Goines, who is a researcher who's done these experiments on mice, the Daily Mail reports that he wants to reduce his BMI. Sounds like a good idea, given that it's currently 31, which makes him officially obese.
Right.
So, like any good dieter, he's cut his calorie intake, giving up full-fat milk, fried foods, and fatty snacks such as crisps and biscuits. They mean potato chips and cookies.
All the things that make life worth living.
Watching the BBC, that I know what's going on here. And he's replaced it with fruit, yogurt, muesli, and salads. Okay, so he's gone on a severe calorie-restricted diet.
Okay.
His plan is to reduce his intake to just 1,300 calories a day, well below the optimum level recommended by the British government's healthy eating guidelines,
right,
until he reaches his target, a BMI of 18.5. At which point, he intends to return to his former eating habits, supplementing it with alpha-lipoic acid, and he contends that he will keep his lower BMI and continue to accrue all the health benefits associated with that 1,300-calorie-a-day diet.
I hope he's right. How hard is it to get your hands on alpha-lipoic acid? Is it like...
Apparently, it's not hard. I think you can get it at most, if you go to a vitamin shop or any place that sells... that sells food supplements, it should be available.
Okay. Well, if I start hearing good things, I might give that a try, because, like most dieters, I can hold out 6 months. I can lose weight temporarily with the best of them. It's the long haul that, like most people, I have a hard time keeping it off. So.
Well, I think 1,300 calories a day. That would be a hard.
That is hard, even for 6 months.
Follow for life. I don't know that I don't know that I could do that. I know that I can change how I eat, because I have done that.
I
managed to lose quite a bit of weight, but without radically changing my diet back, I note that the weight starts coming back on. It's like I'm not really on a diet. I'm supposedly maintaining, but even while trying to maintain, there's this tendency of weight to creep back up. And what is exciting to me about what Goines is talking about here is the notion that maybe you can bottom out and then lock that in. I'm not looking forward to pigging out. I mean, Goines talks like he can't wait to lose all the weight, go off the diet, and just eat whatever he wants. To me, that's not as exciting as just the idea of getting the weight off and being able to keep it off. I still want to eat healthy. I'm not looking for a license to have a dozen chili dogs a day or anything like that. But the idea of not having to face this, my weight's slowly working its way back up,
right,
sounds very appealing. And if alpha lipoic acid is the, you know, magic bullet that solves that problem, great. But even if it's something that helps, even if it's something that that just gives us a big boost in that direction, that's still something very much, I think, to be looked forward to. So
on our long shot scale of 1 to 10, where would you, you know, just where would you guess to put that? 10 being the longest of long shots and 1 being a sure thing.
Okay, so 1's a short shot and a 10 is like just that's ridiculous.
Yeah, just out in the blue kind of thing.
I'm going to
Michael Darling's got 8.37. Okay. Thanks, Michael.
I think that's overstating. I'm going to give it about a 5. I'll start off with that one right in the middle.
Right in the dead middle. I tell you what, I'm going to be a little more optimistic. I'm going to give it a 3, and by that I mean not necessarily that it's the magic bullet, but that it is of some help. And that's
okay,
and
that there is some benefit based on what Goins is talking about there.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay.
If it works really good in our little cousins, the mice, then maybe it'll be of some benefit to we humans. So, yeah.
Now, Michael points out in the chat room that precision makes numbers real. I just a quick anecdote related to that. I don't know if you saw, but our friend Dave Goble, the co-founder of the Methuselah Foundation, left a comment on that blog post. And he was talking about his own experience with giving up eating sugar and all forms of sweeteners and how that helped him to lose weight and how walking on a treadmill has helped him to keep the weight off. Great advice, great story. But what I loved was he starts the story off 1.6 years ago.
Well, it's a little more than 1.5, not
who
quite
measures
2.
Time like that, you know?
Apparently Dave Goble does.
Dave
That's
Goble
great.
Does. So
yeah.
That precision definitely made that story, that precision made the numbers in that story very real to me. So this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're talking about long shot futures. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 347-215-8972 or join us in the chat room or drop us a line. Either way, we'd like to hear what long shot futures you are rooting for. And I'll turn it over to you now. Stephen, what do you got for us, long shot future?
Well, I had tried to get Brian Wang on the show because he had written a blog post about uranium, and it was actually pointed to by Glenn Reynolds. And in his post, he was talking about how you can get uranium from seawater. I'd heard, I don't know, maybe a month or 2 months ago, that there's only enough uranium in the world to power nuclear reactors for a short period of time, so we can't really look to uranium to solve all our problems. Well, Brian goes, you know, he says, no, there's plenty of uranium in the world. As a matter of fact, we can go and go to the oceans, the world's oceans, and there's enough uranium out there in the world's oceans to power, give us all of the electricity we need for the entire world for a billion years at the current level of usage. And that's a whole lot of electricity. And the reason it's not done is because uranium at present is because uranium taken from the ocean is a little more expensive to get to than uranium we can mine. But
it's still a net energy
gain and
production from doing that, right?
Absolutely. And I think it came to about like $1,000 to get a pound of uranium from the oceans. That doesn't seem like all that much, you know. And he was saying basically, you know, it would come to like a penny per watt, you know, of electricity or something. But it's of no real. It doesn't really matter. The amount that you have to spend to get the uranium from the ocean is not prohibitive at all, and it's already being done. So I guess it's not a long shot at all. And the point of me asking him to be on the show and to tell the story of all that was that, you know, some great futures are not really a long shot. Some things we just continue to develop the technologies we have, and bang, we get a pretty bright future even without the benefit of a long shot. But the cool thing about long shots is that it makes things it can throw a monkey wrench into our plans, you know, because we can't see what's going to happen, you know. So
right. Well, I think that it's good to know that as with the mundane singularity, which was another Brian inspired topic that we did a program on a while back, that you can end up in a very good place in the future without huge, dramatic, unexpected things happening.
Right.
Because the possibilities are out there for good stuff to happen, just based on some pretty linear trends, just following some natural developments and looking at things like, well, how much uranium do we actually have? And I hadn't seen the billion number. I saw that if we multiplied our energy usage by 100 worldwide, that we would have enough uranium to supply all the world's electricity for 19,000 years or something like that. So either way, sounds like
we got plenty of uranium in the world's oceans, and we probably could get it cheaper if we actually started doing it and scaling it up, you know, and learning how to do it better, getting the and getting it from the ocean. And you know, and while you're doing that, you might put in a desalination plant right there too. So kill a couple of birds with one stone.
There you go. While you're yanking the uranium out of the water, might as well pull some salt out and solve the world's problems, which hails back to our theme program of a couple of weeks ago, as a matter of fact.
Was that Harvey or was that Matt that had brought that up?
That was Harvey. That was his award-winning idea. That's what got him the coffee.
Okay, all right. Okay, as far as long shots go, I guess to get back to what you tossed, when you tossed it to me and asked for a long shot, I guess my favorite would be the strange black light power story. This is a form of fusion, apparently, that shouldn't be happening, according to the world's physicists. And the people that are doing it say, well, you know, should or shouldn't be, we got it working. And here it is, we got it working. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, this is just a very elaborate hoax. It seems kind of strange to me what would be the point of such a hoax? I guess to drum up a bunch of venture capital and then disappear with it. But it seems
gone.
Like a,
exactly. Yeah.
It seems like it's a pretty they've taken this one to the ultimate extreme. It'd be the greatest hoax of all time. It's I guess, but. You know, Michael has an opinion about it as well. I mean, having looked at it and examined what they're talking about a little bit, Michael, what's your thoughts on it?
My opinion is that I have absolutely no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah. It's.
I mean, seriously, it's
good answer.
You read the claim. You can read the conclusion. I understand the English language usually. And the conclusion is that, oh, and then we get all this power, and it costs us virtually nothing to keep it going.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, back up to that first part of the equation.
We do this, and then something magical happens, and we get all this power.
Well, here's the magic part. Here's the magic part. Okay, so if you're familiar with quantum mechanics at all, with quantum physics, you know that we have this idea in our minds of...
And I'm not.
Well, you know, if you've watched Cosmos or something, I'm not saying I like have a degree in it or anything, but you have this idea in your mind. You know, hydrogen atom is just the purest of atoms, right? It's just the nucleus with one electron flying around it, right? And when we say it's flying around it, we have this idea that it's circling it, and we picture these, you know, like planets orbiting the solar system. But actually, there are predefined positions that electron can be in, and
right.
Those are the different
quantum orbits. And there's
that electron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different. Yeah. Quantum states, right? Is the basic idea, and the lowest of those is state number one. These are all integers, right? The whole idea of quantum is these indivisible numbers. So you can be in quantum state one, or you can be in quantum state two. There is no such thing as quantum state 1.5. Okay, that does not exist.
It's like grooves of a record. You can't. There's no place in between to be.
Exactly. The place in between simply doesn't exist. So what Mills is saying that he is doing is he is taking an electron and moving it from quantum state 1 to like quantum state 0.75 or 0.9 or something. Something less
something
than 1.
Something lower than 1. Anderson.
Something lower than one, a state that quantum physics tells us does not exist. Okay, a state that is impossible and doesn't exist.
And by doing that, it creates energy somehow.
Well, yeah, you release a huge amount of heat by moving the electron from that quantum state one to quantum state two. That heat you can then turn a turbine, and so from water, where the hydrogen atoms are grabbed and this is done to, you're producing a tremendous amount of energy.
Okay.
It sounds like absolute insanity to anyone who actually understands the physics, which, you know, none of us really do, although we can, you know, we can use our little word pictures, you know, to the extent that that's helpful.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Something's happening. They're getting energy out of it. In the post I wrote about this a few weeks ago, a physicist was actually hired by, I think it was Greenpeace of all people, to go down and investigate. And he was said he was as skeptical as anyone else, and he still doesn't accept the idea that they're moving that electron to that position because he doesn't believe that that state exists. But he says they're doing something, and energy is coming out. Okay, it's definitely producing real results. So even if Mills doesn't understand what he's doing,
yeah,
okay,
that could be a possibility. He could have stumbled on something and be doing something to create energy, and doing it without breaking any laws of quantum physics. Yeah, you know? It's possible. Well, you know, and I suppose the long shot is that there's something about quantum physics that this will break some theories, and we'll have to rewrite everything. You know. Maybe the unified theory will come out of this somehow, but again, that's a long, long shot.
If it works, we rewrite quantum physics, or somebody looks at it and goes, no, that's not what's happening. This is what's happening, and then Mills rewrites his description of his process.
Right.
Which
it's a big pile of crap, and nothing. It's a big hoax, and it ends up coming off like that guy that was cloning animals a few years ago in South Korea.
Right. Well, I would say that, so if we're going to rate this one, that quantum mechanics is in need of being completely rewritten, I would give that about a 9 on the long shot scale. But that this might be a viable means of producing energy, I'm going to give that about a 6.
Okay.
They seem to be doing something. They've attracted serious attention and persuaded some people who know a lot more about this stuff than I do, who seem to be looking at it going, yeah, there does seem to be something going on there. So it's a long shot, but I don't think as long if we're ready to open our minds and say, well, maybe he's wrong about what he's doing, but he's right that you can produce energy that way.
Well, I hope that he's right at least about that, and I hope it's not a hoax, because that would solve a lot of problems if it turns out that he's got some way to produce a lot of energy from, you know, room temperature water. So
yeah, well, this is definitely one. These are the futures we're rooting for. You know, even if you think it's a 9, it's like, well, I'm it's okay with me if they have to rewrite the books on quantum mechanics if we get the energy out of the deal, right?
Right.
To me, that seems like a fair trade, and I'd be okay with that.
I like what Michael Darling has a 9.837 on this one.
I think he's. I think a little grade inflation is set in there. He's rounding that up to 10, and I don't think it's. I don't think it's that unlikely, but it's unlikely, or it wouldn't be on our long shot list.
Yeah.
And did you want to give it a rating there, Stephen?
Yeah, I'm going to say 5 that something's going on there, and about a 9 that we have to rewrite the laws of quantum mechanics.
Okay, so we're pretty close. We're in the ballpark.
Yeah.
All right, so let's try another one. I've got my next one is I'm calling it the Usain Bolt factor, and I hope everyone got to see the men's 100 meter last night.
Are we talking about 8 gold medals at this point? Is that right?
I'm not talking about the swimming. I'm talking about the 100 meter dash.
Oh, okay. My bad.
Not on Michael Phelps. I'm on Usain Bolt at this point.
Okay.
So,
all right.
One could use Michael Phelps as an example of the same thing. And actually, where I'm going with this one is, you know, how long of a long shot some of these futures are is going to depend on how much time we give until we're looking for the outcome.
Yeah.
So Usain Bolt, Jamaican runner, ran the 100-meter in, I believe it was, 9.69 seconds last night. Broke his own record, set a new world record, won the gold. And it's just amazing how fast world records in the sprinting categories and a lot of these other categories. I mean, if you've been watching the Olympics, you know, like in the swimming, they've got a green line showing you where the world record is, and you see all these swimmers ahead of it. You know, there are people
yeah.
who aren't even placing. They're not even getting bronze.
And how cool is that, by the way, that they have the technology to know where the world record is and have a line that follows the swimmers as they're swimming. That's pretty cool. And I'm pretty sure they didn't have that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure they didn't have that in the last Summer Olympics 4 years ago.
It's certainly the first time I can remember watching that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool to me.
It's very cool. So Bolt has set this new record, and the record for the sprint has, like I said, it's just been, you know, if you plotted it, it's just been sloping downward dangerously. You know, you're heading towards one of these exponential curves almost. I mean, we're just shaving hundredths of a second, you know, tenths of a second off the time that it takes somebody to run 100 meters.
Yeah.
So,
apparently, we're getting close to an absolute limit, at least of unengineered people.
Well, you would think, although they thought 10 seconds was the absolute limit.
Yeah.
You know, they're not that long ago, they thought, well, nobody's ever going to be able to run this in less than 10 seconds. And, you know, now it's like, well, 9.7, that's got to be just about it, you know. And he beat that last night. So you look and you go, well, I don't know, how low can we go? 9.5, 9.3? But you're right, eventually for unaugmented humans, and, of course, there was this whole controversy about in the past he has taken performance-enhancing drugs. He's not on them now. He's certified for the Olympics. He won fair and square. He's clean. But did the fact that he had those in the past give him some boost even unto today? I don't know. But the real question is, what will the 100 meters record look like in 50 years? And will the Olympics be played with unaugmented humans, or will we see this transition, this shift to people who have been augmented?
My thought on that is that when you've got normal kids that are not even training for the Olympics outperforming unenhanced athletes, then it's going to get pretty boring to watch unenhanced athletes, and we'll make the shift then to anything goes
yep.
for the Olympics.
And so my long shot future is I think we're going to have Olympians running the 100 meter in under 5 seconds within the next 30 years.
Yeah.
So 30 years from today, they'll actually beat the 5-second mark on the 100 meter.
Cool.
And my long shot part two on that one is everybody, all human beings who want to, will be able to run the 100 meters in under 5 seconds within 100 years. It'll just be a standard thing. You know, it'll be like a 12-minute mile, right? Anybody pretty much who wanted to could do one of those, right?
Right.
Yeah, you can run 100 meters in 5 seconds within 100 years. I think that that will be the level of, and it won't even be considered extreme. That'll be the interesting thing. I think people will have, the human condition will have been augmented to that point that will do those astounding things, and it will not be considered any major extreme thing that's been done. It will just be considered a pretty standard thing. Yeah, well, you know, sure, I had the, you know, I had the upgrade package done on the on my nerves, my bones. I'm running that good artificial blood that holds all the oxygen. My heart's been augmented, and sure, yeah, I can run 100 meters in less than 5 seconds. But you know, so can my grandma, right? I mean, that it will be at that level of normalcy within 100 years. At which point, I don't know. You know, you'll have Olympians if that whole paradigm even still exists, running it in 3 seconds or less.
I hope it does exist at that point, because you know, Olympics have been good for the world. I think by and large, it's been an opportunity for the nations to get together and you know, and do something other than shoot at each other. So
I think so too. I think that in some form, something like that will exist. It's just that I believe that performance augmentation will get to the point where it might become questionable whether you can even have a meaningful competition in some of that stuff. We might have people getting together to compete in completely different things that we can't even imagine now because we'll all be so augmented by then. We'll all be capable of doing so many amazing things. Because I was watching him run that. I mean, it doesn't, you know, obviously it's a short little run you're seeing there because it's over just about before he starts. And I was just thinking, man, I'd like to be able to run like that. You know, that guy is really tearing. Yeah. And he had daylight between himself and the rest of the guys who were trying to catch him. So I don't think it's fair for me to rate this one since I'm putting it out there. What do you think? Olympians running the 100 meter in under 5 seconds within 30 years.
I'm going to give that about a four.
About a four? Okay.
Yeah.
And everybody running 100 meters in under 5 seconds within 100 years. By everybody, let's say, you know.
It seems to me if I buy the first one, the second one I get for free. You know, I mean, if you're going to have augmented people in just a few years, then having everybody augmented to that level and a few years after that comes along for the ride. So I'll give them both four.
Okay. And it looks like our little skeptic in the chat room is giving it a two for everyone and a two for Olympians and a seven or eight for the general population. Okay, so that's fair. And I note that Harvey tells us that our heads are getting larger like the aliens, and it's hard to run with a big head. So runners will have to genetically have wind tunnel tested heads. Yeah, we'll be really fast, and we'll be running with really tiny
with aerodynamic skulls. Yeah, I can see that coming.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll have aerodynamic skulls. That's right. So this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're talking about long shot future developments that we're hoping for, but that are by no means certain. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 347-215-8972 or join us in the chat room. And speaking of the chat room, Michael, any ideas for long shot futures that have come up so far from our friends in the chat room?
No. I threw out Bussard trying to get you guys steered that direction, and maybe we'll get there, but no other long shots have been mentioned.
Okay, well, we'll count you as a member of the chat room, so get us going on Bussard thing.
Okay, well...
This is kind of a nice follow-on to the discussion of uranium and the future of fission energy. So now we're going to talk about fusion energy, right?
Fusion energy, Harvey is mentioning in the chat room that as far as long shots go, the Cubs are still in it and looking good, and it is mid-August. Although
wow.
I would point out that as a lifelong Cubs fan... mid-August and the Cubs don't always get along that well, although I have, you know, high confidence that next year is this year. So we'll just leave it at that for now.
This could be the year the Cubs go all the way. I want to say it was about a year ago that we were saying, well, the only way the Rockies could even be in it is if they won, like, the next 20 games in a row. And it totally happened. Okay,
that's a true statement. Anything
is possible. All right. So
hey, the last time the Democratic Convention was in Denver was 1908, and that happened to be the last year the Cubs won the World Series.
Hey, that's cool. Okay, maybe
there's
some
synchronicity there potentially. Who knows? Okay.
I don't know what it takes for the Cubs to win the World Series. Maybe the Democrats have to meet in Denver, and that's what it takes. I don't know.
Did the Democrats win that year or not?
No, we elected a Republican that year.
Oh, okay. All right.
Interesting. So, see, it's all connected there.
But the World Series was over by then.
Well, anyway, Michael, tell us about Bussard.
Bussard is now dead. May he rest in peace. He died about I think it was not quite a year ago. It was the fall of 07.
Right.
And he, at that time, and for several years prior, was working on an inertial electrostatic confinement design for a fusion reactor, or an IEC. And the idea, in a nutshell, is that instead of building this gigantic device like a tokamak or a tokamak and just making bigness and the overall strength of the device or the mass of the device what contains your fusion field. His idea or his working idea was that you could use electrostatic charge to confine or ionic. You'd confine the charge using an electrostatic field, which obviously doesn't weigh near as much as a gigantic steel device. But you still need a big device. You still need to build a thing. You still need to accelerate your fusible atoms. And then the question becomes, and you get this argument all the time in the fusion land, do you get net energy? Do you get a positive net? Boussard thought yes. He thought he was, $20 to $40 million of working capital away from having a prototype that could show, look, if I could just build this thing, scale it up, I get net energy, and now we have fusion.
So let me just put this in kind of movie language, if I could, all right? So fusion is the thermonuclear energy that powers the sun. So we're talking about a reaction that's kind of like as hot as the sun. So in order to normally create a machine that will do that, you have to create a great big huge machine to contain it. And basically what Boussard was talking about doing was, no, you don't need a big machine. We're going to put it in this, like, magnetic force field, right?
In a nutshell.
And
yeah, okay.
and it's a small machine. And about what size is it, Michael? Give us something in the real world we can compare that to.
Well, the last generation, like, prototype demo that they built would fit in your bedroom. It's not a gigantic thing. However, that working model was designed to go, hey, we're going to prove the concept here, because what we want to do is scale up one size bigger. And I think they were at generation 7 or 8 when they got to that size and that design. And Boussard was at that point found out he had cancer and said, you know what? I got to secure funding for this thing after I die, because if the cancer docs can't beat the cancer and I can't beat the cancer, I'm not going to be around to keep operating in secret, because his funding was largely black budget. Not a lot of people knew what was going on. The Navy was funding a lot of the work at down in New Mexico at his company, and so he went public. And as part of that discussion, these are the kinds of questions that came up. Well, you know, how big could wouldn't the thing have to be so much bigger? He's like, we didn't get to that part. We were doing proof of concept. We were doing basic physics work. Now what's left, according to Boussard, is the engineering. And I'm sure if we had a room full of engineers working on it, they'd be like, yeah, what we need is a little bit more basic science before the engineering's really ready. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that.
But what we're talking about is something that could be accomplished, perhaps, if it can be accomplished at all. We're talking about something that could be accomplished for billions of dollars instead of trillions of dollars, which is...
Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
Which is what the mainstream fusion programs are running right now, it looks like.
Well, and the great thing about fusion is, unlike, say, blacklight, fusion is a process for producing energy that everyone agrees is possible, since, you know, it powers the universe pretty much.
Right.
There's no scientific dispute as to whether it can be done. It's just, how to do it efficiently and how to do it effectively. And Boussard may have been on to the method for making that happen. So how are we going to rate this one? What are the chances, what long shot factor are you giving Boussard-style fusion within the next 20 years or so?
Having watched some of his presentations that he gave right before he died, he seemed very convinced and a very brilliant man. I'm gonna give this guy a 3.
Okay, we'll give that a 3. Michael's giving it a 5 with funding.
If he gets funded,
10,
yep.
10 plus
yeah.
Without funding. Okay, so
yeah, absolutely, with no money, it doesn't happen. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's
and
not
buck,
it's not the kind
rush.
Of thing two guys in their garage can just dope out.
Yeah.
Right.
No doubt.
It's going to be a big project. Again, time becomes the other factor here. Without funding, it's 10 plus, but even if the funding doesn't show up next year or 10 years from now or 20 years from now, eventually, if the idea is sound, it seems to me that someone will find a way to fund it. And if it really can work, that they will make it work. Now, I noticed in the chat room we had some ideas from Matt about long-shot futures that he's looking at. Fill us in on those, Michael.
Let's see. Matt has – and I kind of missed the thread here. So, Matt, if you could flesh this out a little bit.
Let me –
Yeah, that's okay. He posts that Nick Bostrom has argued that finding evidence of extraterrestrial life is bad news. And Matt has said that I think, conversely, anything that makes interstellar travel would be good news for the probable survival of civilization. And I'd have to agree with that, in the sense that eventually, at some point, we can't live on Earth forever.
Right. So if we see other civilizations that have made this leap to interstellar travel, we know that it's possible, it's doable, and it means that we can do it.
Yes. And so
okay.
we'd need to you know, figure that part. The interstellar part obviously becomes the problematic component of that.
Matt, I see you're hoping for faster-than-light travel and communication, but you really doubt it, giving it a long-shot factor of 9.9. All right, guys, what do you think? Faster-than-light travel and communication? Stephen?
I'm a little more optimistic. I'd give it about an 8. It's a long-shot deal, though. Based on what we know, it looks impossible. But we don't know everything. We don't have a unified theory yet. And so... I can't rule it out completely.
Michael, what do you think?
I'm going to go lower, not because I think we're going to figure out a way to accelerate something to faster than light and use it for a modern telegraph or a modern personal transportation device, but because we'll defeat it with something like paired electrons or some quantum particles that actually exist in the same place, in two different places at the same time, and we'll manipulate that relationship in a way that won't really be traveling faster than the speed of light, but it won't matter because it'll feel like it is.
Okay,
fair enough. Well, you know what? If as long as it feels like it, as long as you get the same net benefit, we can trick it out any number of ways, I would think.
Yeah,
now,
the old idea of bending space, warping space to, creating a shortcut between two different places, that's sort of the same thing, too. You're not really going faster than the speed of light, but you might as well be.
Like some kind of warp drive, if you will.
Yeah.
Matt, stay tuned. This week there will be a new edition of Better All the Time coming out, and I am addressing this very issue. And because I'm addressing this very issue, I'm going to give this a rating of for the near term of the next 2 centuries or so, probably about a 5. But for the long term of the next 5 centuries or so, it falls to a 1. I think that this is a solvable problem, and that we will solve it, and that faster-than-light travel and communication, whether they're really faster than light or we've tricked it out somehow, will occur.
Phil, do we have time for you to talk about a little more quantum weirdness, the undo button?
You know what? I think we're going to have to save that one to next week because if we start now, it'll take us longer than we've allowed for the show tonight. So
okay.
Why don't we save that? We've got several more of these, and I see that that our chat room is starting to warm to the subject, too. So keep thinking about your long-shot futures. We'll pick this up again next week, and we'll pick our favorite long-shot future. So what do we got
going
on?
Long-shot future part two.
Long-shot future part two, yeah.
Right.
See if we can top our long shots for this week. What do we got going on music-wise tonight?
The band is Yuma House, and the song is Red Car.
Red Car. All right. So any particular speculative significance to this tune?
No, it's just a happening tune this week.
All right. Red Car by Yuma?
Yuma House.
Yuma House and Red Car. Well, we'll listen to that. And Stephen, we'll look for show notes, which we want to be sure and include a link to. I'm sure you were going to do this anyway, but let's be sure and include a link to Brian's post over at Next Big Future on uranium. That
Absolutely.
Was good stuff. Yeah, we want to be sure and include that. All right. Well, thanks for your contributions tonight, Stephen. Thank you, Michael, and to all our friends in the chat room. It's great being with you all, and we look forward to talking with you about long-shot futures even further next week on the next Fast Forward Radio. Good night.
be something subtle, easy to miss. Wish I could party with you once more, throw the future up for grabs. This life is very fun.